This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Kinnear. Thanks for joining us. Stephen Cavett's bio begins by saying he's always chasing the next great story. He's been an instructor at Florida Gulf Coast University since 2018, teaching English, creative writing, and interdisciplinary courses, as well as advising the university's Creative Writing Club, and is a faculty member with the Wiser Research Assistant Program. His roots are in Georgia and Tennessee, and he taught for Duke University, the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga State, and the University of Georgia before coming to Southwest Florida to teach at FGCU. As a writer, Cavett has published his poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, and has done some journalism. His sci-fi novella, The Distance Between Stars, came out last April and was also released as a podcast audiobook. It's the first entry in what he calls the Und Wars series. It caught my attention because I'm a fan of sci-fi, told through sound especially, so we're sharing a glimpse behind the writer's curtain on the show today. He and I spoke yesterday. Let's hear that now. Welcome to the show, Stephen. It's good to see you.
Thanks so much, Mike. Glad to be back.
Were you a sci-fi fan growing up?
I was a fan of any escapism that would take me out of my bedroom and into other worlds. So it could have been Western, sci-fi, fantasy. It didn't matter.
I went back and listened to your Three Song Stories episode, so I was reminded of your background growing up in Georgia and Tennessee in a religious family where Guns N' Roses was contraband. Was sci-fi contraband?
No, I don't. It certainly wouldn't have been for my family. Like, they supported my reading habit. I could sometimes get away with sneaking a novel under the dinner table, you know, and like reading it for a little while before my mom would call me out. So they wouldn't have cared. I don't think I ever heard preachers rail against it. It's mostly the devil's music they were worried about.
Understood. So how long have you been at FGCU now?
Since 2018, so almost 8 years now.
Tell us what you teach.
I teach English and creative writing, so a little bit of comp, a little bit of all of the creative writing stuff we do, from intro to nature writing to a new speculative fiction course I put together, so kind of similar to what I'm writing.
Speculative fiction course, was it before or after this got underway?
I was teaching the first version of it, which originally was like a special topic, sci-fi and fantasy, while I was writing that one, so kind of at the same time.
What's the origin story of this?
The origin story of that is that it's really hard to
Which, by the way, The Distance Between Stars is the name of the this that I was referring
That's
to.
That's the this. This came out of a writing group I put together with some friends here at FGCU, other faculty members. The trick about being a writing teacher is that you don't have any time to do your writing. And so you have to really fight to carve out time to do your own work and not just respond to your students' work. So we have a group of faculty members that gets together. Now it's every other Friday. We spend about an hour and a half, and we'll have like a writing prompt and some quiet time and then sharing time. And one day I had set the writing prompt as like, I don't want to tell you this, but, or I don't want to talk about this, but. And then Johnny Quarles just started talking in my free writing about how he helps to blow up the world. And I was like, this sounds like a book.
And that's the I don't really want to say narrator, but the closest thing you have to a narrator, they're all kind of narrators, I guess.
They're all kind of first-person monologues. I would call our truest documentarian or narrator Nikish Romer. She's the young journalist on the ships that's going around and interviewing people. Johnny's probably the one that's one of the two that's the closest to me, you know.
I can tell.
Right?
And it's your voice.
It's my voice.
In the audio version.
He's named from my mama's dad, so he's named from my grandfather. Weirdly enough, it just happened. So, yeah, he's not exactly the narrator, but I understand some of his strangenesses.
Were any of the people, I'm kind of going out of order here, but I want to ask now, were any of the people who were a part of that group part of the team that you did the audio version with?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for asking. So we've got two faculty members out of that writing group that are voicing characters here. The head of our creative writing program, Lori Cornelius, is the voice of Leslie Rhodes. She's a British literature professor who adopts an orphan
She does a
kid.
Great job.
Oh, my God. Did you get to the part where she sings gospel?
I've listened to the whole thing.
Bless you. Yeah. My pitch for everybody on campus is like, have you heard my show? And they go, no. And I'll say, do you want to hear Lori Cornelius sing gospel? And everybody says yes. Lori hates it that's my pitch. But she does a fantastic job. Our storytelling professor, Joel Ying, is also a character. He's basically the lead scientist for NASA in charge of the whole expedition out to the stars. So we got those two, several students and former students, also voice characters, and then a couple of community partners from Tallahassee and Jacksonville also.
Did you hear it as an audio production right at the beginning, or was it a novella told this way that became one?
I appreciate you asking that. I wrestled with it. I always knew it was going to be an audio story. And then somewhere a little bit into it, I went, wait, this could also be a book. You know, I think it's an unusual format maybe for a book to just have the monologue pieces, a little bit experimental. But I always heard it as a show, you know, as an audio show.
Are you familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yes.
Have you heard the audio drama?
I don't think I have.
I ask that because A, I grew up reading that and love it. B, it was produced as an audio drama by the BBC that Douglas Adams was writing on a week-to-week basis before the book ever came to be.
What?
Kind of the same thing.
I had no idea.
You got to listen to it.
I got to listen to it. I knew about War of the Worlds, which was released and was so compelling that people actually thought it was happening live and freaked out, thinking it was a news report. But I didn't know about that one. That's great.
The Und Wars. Where did the name come from? Und means and in German, right?
Does it?
I looked it up. That's the closest thing I can come to a definition besides the aliens in your book. Where did the Und Wars premise come from? Did it come out of Johnny's mouth while you were channeling him?
Came out of Johnny's mouth in the first few sentences. I'm now going to use your research at my next interview and say that it's the andness of all of us. Yeah, he just said it. He said how the Und destroyed the world or whatever, and they're the Und ship. And I thought, all right, that'll work. And I've never really pondered what it was. It just seemed right.
So let me describe the premise without, I guess, I mean, it's pretty short, so I can't give much away because of the novel way that it's told, I think. But it's pretty much contemporary Earth. Aliens called the Und show up, and they just are, like, overpowering compared to us. At one point, one of your characters describes them as an invasive species that we can't, you know, we try, but we don't have a chance, really, against them. And X number of humans wind up on spaceships with a sort of rapidly developed space program, and they wind up out in space, and there's a young woman who has an iPhone, and she interviews people, and that's what we hear are the short interviews with these people.
Mm-hmm.
How'd I do?
Perfect. Yeah, you're my new press secretary. Done. Mike, you're hired.
It's a novel way, like I said, to tell the story because, you know, Samuel, who's in the booth, he's been listening to it too. And, you know, I'm sure as a writing instructor, you're familiar with the show don't tell premise.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can listen to the whole thing in a couple hours. You can read the whole thing in a couple hours. None of the narration is really very much about what happened. But by the end, you've got a whole story that you've imagined of what happened. I mean, that show don't tell thing, I mean, is that on purpose, I guess?
It is a principle I'm trying to live by. I appreciate your noticing that. Yeah, I think one of the things I notice can happen with younger writers and sometimes popular stuff you see on social media writing is a whole lot of feelings, you know? So a feelings way to tell this story would have been about, oh, I'm so miserable that I'm, you know, I'm stuck on a ship, or oh, these terrible things happen. But I want it to be a little more deliberately crafted in its sensory details so that the pain or the success or whatever kind of trickles through these really precise moments. So the character that Lori Cornelius voices, she'll be straight up about her feelings of having lost her husband, but it's going to be sandwiched between these image flashbacks, you know, that do a little backstory of where they were and how they got to the ships. I think that, I'll borrow from Nate Hill, our former FGCU professor and incredibly successful writer. He did a lecture series here at FGCU a few years back, where he explained that when you do a good job of building the sensory details, when you put the reader in a scene, it actually fires the mirror neurons in the reader's brain. So the reader's nervous system thinks this is really happening. So I want to do that. I want to put you in the moment where your inside thinks it's happening, so the inside or the feeling is organic, rather than me just saying, oh, this is so terrible, right? Like, oh, I'm lonely on a ship, how sad.
Well, let's talk about the production of it. How did the production work?
The production worked like this was my first time, and boy, I took a shot in the dark. I did individual recording since it's only monologues. I only needed one participant there at a time. We did almost all of our campus actors I recorded in the FGCU Media Center in the library. And this was the old one. They've since moved it to a different room in the library. So we did all of the cuts there, and then my two out-of-town actors I traveled, and that setup was just a traveling USB mic and a MacBook. And then our amazing, phenomenal, completely gifted sound guru, John Cornelius, who's Lori Cornelius' husband, took all that terrible recording I had done and managed to make it halfway decent. Actually, he made it great. And that process took us a couple years, really, between the recording and the editing. And would have been a lot smoother, I think, if I had known how to do really good raw sound. So John had to pick up a lot of the slack for me.
Well, I tell you what, and if he hears this, he'll probably chuckle. But as an audio person myself, I could tell that you kind of had to rein in the original sound. But what you wound up with had a vibe that would have been hard to create purposefully, that to me worked great with this premise, mm-hmm. because it's being told on a spaceship with an iPhone. You know what I mean? Like if it had been in a proper studio done perfectly, it would have sounded different, and in some ways, I think, would have detracted from the impact of the finished product.
Love it. I did have that thought going through. Yeah, there was some unclear sound quality that I loved in my original cuts. That there are a few things about that studio we used to have at the library that are hard to beat. It was situated right next to the HVAC for the whole building, so there was a constant hum that John had to try to phase out of every single cut. And a little bit of room echo here and there that, the school did its best to put together a good studio over there, but a little bit of live stuff that did make me think of the cavern of a spaceship. Yeah.
This is going to seem like a strange aside, but it's actually the perfect segue. One of the astronomy professors at FGCU years ago lamented to me that they built the little observatory right in the middle of campus surrounded by lights.
Yep.
It's kind of like putting an audio studio right next to the HVAC handler. But then I say that because astronomy, astrology, stars, constellations, one of the themes running through this book, right?
Mm-hmm. And one of the coolest things to research. I've been fascinated by constellations ever since about 2005 when I was an outdoor educator for University of Georgia. The constellations I know were almost at the edge of my knowledge here, because we're almost going into March, but I could take you out at night and point to like five constellations that I know right now, because we're still in the winter. And those are the ones that I learned when we were doing our training, like in the winter season. So I've been fascinated with constellations ever since then, but had to go a lot deeper into astronomy and stars and constellations and space travel and theoretical space travel, which was a really fun way to nerd out. I tell my kids in my classes, like, the great permission of being a writer is you get to just nerd out about everything. If you want to go to Mexico and try fishing, you get to say, well, I'm researching my book, and nobody can tell you it's wrong.
It's the same thing about producing a local radio show on NPR, except you don't get to go to Mexico.
But you can go there in one paragraph of this book.
Yes, you can. The art at the beginning of the chapters, it says in the back of the cover page, it's from 1824. Like, how did that come to be? That's a pretty... I could tell as soon as I started flipping through them, I'm like, oh, I bet that's something out of the archives. How'd you find that stuff?
Yeah, I actually went searching for that mostly so we could find some public domain art that I thought was appropriate. The cool part of... Do you mind if I borrow the copy for a second?
Sure.
The cool part about this is that these, what'd you call them, chapter heading art pieces are kind of stolen. And so they got famous by an artist that had borrowed them from somebody else and turned them into like little pinprick things you could hold up and see the light through. So they got famous as these cards, I believe, sold that way. But they had originally been like lifted almost wholesale from another author. And I just think that little layeredness of its history is sad but cool.
I'd like to take a moment to reintroduce my guest. Stephen Cavett teaches English, creative writing, and interdisciplinary courses at FGCU, and he's faculty advisor of the Creative Writing Club. He's here today to talk about his novella and podcast called The Distance Between Stars. It came out last April. It tells a story of survival after Earth is devastated by aliens called the Und. It's told through short entries by everyday people living on spaceships that are heading out into space to try to start over. If you'd like to engage with the show about this topic or any of our episodes, find us on our social media. We are WGCU Public Media on Instagram and Facebook. At the end of one of the audio chapters, you mentioned that leaving the mountains or leaving your neck of the woods to come to our flat hurricane land was maybe sort of a seed crystal for all this?
Yeah, I knew we'd get around to talking about that.
I don't think it says it in the book. Is that just something from the audio?
I think I did some...
And it's just one line, but I having interviewed you on Three Song Stories, I kind of knew the two sides of your story, so...
So I did a guest visiting appearance at Professor Niner's literature class a year or two ago, and we talked about this book because he focuses it on science fiction. And in his class, he teaches his students that things like aliens are always symbolic of something, right? And so he said, Steve, what are the aliens symbolic of? And I was like, I think they're just aliens, right? Like, I'm not one of those writers that sits down and plots it out. Like, well, this represents this. To me, on one level, this is just it's an action story. But as I got into it, I did realize somewhere in Leland Hames's pieces. So Leland used to be a worker for the park services, a real outdoorsy guy. And as he lamented living on the ship under those fluorescent lights, I realized I was wrestling with the loss of what I think of as my homeland, right? In a lot of ways, being down here for me where I want to be in air conditioning 6 months out of the year, which was unheard of before, is a little bit like being on a spaceship hurtling towards Alpha Centauri. So I'm doing my best I'm still doing my best. 3 years after the last time I was in a studio, or three or four years after we were in a studio together.
At least four.
At least four.
Yeah.
I'm still doing my best to love Florida, and I'm doing better as an outdoorsman. But yeah, the book definitely was part of that rite of passage of letting go of what was and then trying to step into what's next.
At the end, you've got at least, I don't know if it's the entire first chapter, but you've got the beginning of what will presumably be the second book of the Und War series.
Dun, dun, dun.
It seems to be more of just a straight narrative. Is that going to be like a longer novel told differently than this novella with the segments?
Yeah, thank you for asking. It is structurally very different. The first one is set up as these monologues that a journalist has put together. This is our foundational document. So 800 plus years later, the next books in the series will happen. And those will be much more like straightforward kind of science fiction adventure with a literary bent narrative. So they'll have one or two narrators per book, yeah, instead of the monologues.
Where are you in that arc?
Where we are in that arc is my Wiser Eagle research assistant and I, shout out to Jay Perry, just finished proofreading that. So I've got the document complete for the next book. We're in those final edits now. And then I'm about two-thirds or three-fourths of the way through the next book after that in the series. So we're cranking along, trying to.
Are the ancestors of any of these seed characters showing up in your next book?
The audience can't see me starting to scribble notes on my phone.
Is that a spoiler thing?
Also, not just press secretary, ladies and gentlemen, but also plot advisor. I hadn't thought about that, but I love it. Okay, I will say that what happens is that the characters 800 years later are quoting pieces from this documentary series.
Oh.
It's like the first, the first kind of archival piece of literature that's come out of Earth. And so they study it, like those that are in flight school and stuff will study the escape from Earth, and they'll have read or heard this narrative.
Well, as someone who's read and listened to it and who, like I said, show not tell, you create a really vivid scene and I feel like I kind of got to know these characters. I'm happy to know that the document that they created lives on into the future.
Thank you. It's fun as a writer to get to quote yourself, you know? So like my new characters are quoting my old characters and thinking about what they went through. It's kind of sweet.
Hmm. Any idea of you're going to try to do an audio version of the next one? It's a little different animal if you're talking about a full-on, you know, narration, not the different individual bits.
I think it's going to be easier to record rather than scheduling nine different voice actors. I'm pretty committed to putting everything I write out in podcast form now. So I've got an actor lined up to do Snap. So the blurb for the next book is, Jump Tech Snap Arbuckle Jr. tries to save the only girl he almost loved from a space-time anomaly, .. and the vicious aliens known as the Und. So I've got a Snap character lined up, and his sometimes girlfriend, Missy, we're working on an actor for her for the next one.
Are you kind of getting hooked on audio narration?
I'm getting hooked. That
because you've got your other podcast, your poetry podcast. You sound a little bit more comfortable in it.
I am.
Like you're getting used to it.
The first few episodes of that Poetry Professor podcast were rough, but by about episode 10 or 11, it's kind of old hat. So I'm getting there.
I have a dream. I've had a dream here for a long time, and it's. I would need a second me to do it. Like I said, the Hitchhiker's radio drama. I love listening to stories that are done full cast, sound effects, because that's how the Hitchhiker's is.
Yeah.
And I have a dream of us doing one here. WGCU Public Media presents a story told in serial with voices and characters and sounds and... So we'll try to. You are the closest thing I've come to a potential collaborator in that dream.
Interested.
So
I'm interested.
One of these years.
Sign me up. Let's talk.
Before we go, I wanted to ask you, just while you're here, you teach students to be creative, or, you know, you help facilitate their creativity with words.
Okay.
AI.
Oof.
Do they try to use it in a creative writing class? Is that even a thing? If they're in the class, are they more genuinely looking to express themselves? Like, where are you finding that at all, if you found any kind of a balance point? Because it does a pretty good job of coming up with some thoughtful stuff.
Man, it's tough. From about ChatGPT-4 on, it can sound, in writing a poem, about as skillful as a freshman who hasn't had much training yet. I would say across all of my non-senior, let's say, level classes, or at least in my 2000 level classes, 10% of my students every semester are trying to use AI, despite me having a really clear policy against it and some clear consequences. It's pretty staggering. You can't talk to anybody, at least in the liberal arts, certainly in language and literature department, you can't talk to any faculty member about it without seeing that person just kind of sag a little bit. So we're struggling to wrestle with it. I make room a little bit for AI in only a few areas of my classes. I teach a composition course that focuses on writing for the internet, so blogs, podcasts, and they have some areas they can use it for, like brainstorming, charting things out, coming up with content ideas. That stuff I think AI can be ethical and good at. I don't allow it in drafts or poem stories, creative nonfiction. I do, though, because I teach a lot of gen ed classes and elective classes. Students who are not maybe yet committed to the writing life, about 10% of them will try to wing that in, and then they have a come to Jesus moment. In my junior and senior level courses, those tend to be people moving through the creative writing program who are real interested in getting their own voices out, so we don't encounter it as much.
Have you seen any evidence, because I have, of younger people rejecting this, not just AI, but like the whole interconnected world and looking for an analog way to connect to the world? Are you seeing some of that?
I had such a heart-opening moment at the start of my Composition 2 class this semester in January. As we went around the room, we were just kind of introducing ourselves. Two of my young writers said things like, I'm so over AI, and it's like killing what it means to be human. And so one of my ladies said, I've started doing more human creative things, like going to art museums, because I want to be around human creativity. And it's like my heart just sort of opened its wings a little bit, and I thought, okay, we had a bad 5 to 10 years, you know, 20 years of social media, but like maybe we're about to, the pendulum's going to swing back a little bit. So I do see, I see a mix, you know, but there are definitely students that give me hope. They have their heads on straight, as I would say.
I am starting to see, and I bet you'll start to see it too, the use of the word human more.
Oh,
just like you just said, I'm looking for a human experience. Like, we didn't used to say, I want a human experience when we go to the museum.
I know.
But we do now.
And yeah.
So I think the word, if not this year, the word this year or next year of the word of the year is going to be human.
Ooh.
I'm just putting that out there for you and for listeners.
I like that prediction. I stand by that.
Last question or statement. That you playing the guitar at the end?
Oh, that was me playing the guitar at the end.
Not to spoil it for listeners.
That's my song that I wrote years and years ago, yeah. So that's my first radio appearance.
Any final thoughts?
It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to talk about the work, and you're hired as my new press secretary.
Okay. Stephen Cavett is the author of and producer of the podcast of The Distance Between Stars, which is available wherever books are sold or podcasts are listened to. Great talking with you again, Stephen.
You too, Mike. Thank you.
The Distance Between Stars is available as the book or on major podcast distributors like Spotify and Apple, as well as RSS.com. He also makes the Poetry Professor podcast, in which he reads one of his own poems and discusses it and offers listeners a writing prompt, in part to help his fellow writing instructors in their classes. Our show today was produced by yours truly, with audio production help from Samuel Brucker. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kinnairy. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. We're closing the show today with an excerpt from The Distance Between Stars. This is Stephen Cavett as writer Johnny Quarles.
People say she was all filters, makeup too. She was nothing special. They never saw her laugh, not in person. That night, She giggled like a kid every time the plankton flashed. She'd made her first million by then, bought a condo in South Beach, but you could still surprise her. I came up middle class in Georgia. I had a few things published, but I grew up on four-wheelers, you know, Baptist churches and gospel, Waffle House on Saturday mornings. There was nothing like Tara for miles. Still isn't. There won't be again. Hit the bugs so hard they can't chase us off planet. That was the plan. Everybody knew it. The cities were gone, but there were 50, 60 million people in the sticks when we pushed the button. When I pushed the button.